You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 128.
128 of the Family Gamers Podcast. Did you know that 128 is 2 to the 7th power?
I did not, but I did notice that if you add a 0 and change up the order, you would get 2018, which is our topic for this week.
Wow, that was a stretch. But that was a good stretch. That was good work.
I thought it was good.
Well done. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And we are going to talk about 2018 this week. 2 weeks ago, we talked about our 2019 resolutions, and now we're going to have a little retrospective, talk about what we liked about 2018, some of our favorites. There's a lot of games that hit a lot of people's, you know, best of lists and things like that, like Root and stuff like that. But we're going to talk about family games that we really liked in 2018. And there's some that I think we'll mention that we didn't get to play, so we can't really say, oh, they're our favorite games of whatever. But enough people talked about
Maybe worth mentioning them. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're going to talk about this week. But as always, we have a lot of other stuff to talk about first. And at the top of the list is what we've been playing.
So what have we been playing?
Well, okay. So one of my 2019 resolutions was to start tracking my board game plays.
So far, so good.
Yeah, we decided to actually spring for BG Stats, the iOS application. And because we're a family, we can share it, which is kind of handy. So we've been tracking with BG Stats. And I have a kind of a new, I can't call it a resolution, it's just a goal, I guess, which is to get over 365 game plays this year.
I think you're on track.
Yeah, well, today's the 13th,
as
and
of
I have
recording.
19 plays.
All right.
So I'm on track.
Keep up this pace.
Yeah. The first game that I'm going to mention is actually a game that we played just this past week that I really didn't know what to make of it, and I wasn't entirely sure when it was coming in the mail, but we had met with the folks at Project Genius at PAX Unplugged.
And at Boston Fig.
And they sent us a copy of Deblockle.
Yeah, I found Deblockle to be a really interesting, you know, abstract strategy game. The idea is it's nice to look at, so you might keep it on your coffee table if you don't have very young children.
Right.
But it's a two-person game in which each person has four large cubes on the board.
Yep. So it's colored in gold and teal, and the board is a 7x7 grid of
raised squares.
Lowered squares.
And raised ridges.
The cubes that you have all the corners cut off, and so the premise is they could roll across the segments between all the spots. And so each cube has, obviously, six different sides.
Six different faces.
Yep. And each one is a different symbol, and all the different symbols mean different things. And on the board, there's a star in the second row in the center column on each side. Person's side of the board. And so the objective is to roll each of your cubes onto the opponent's star, and when you roll, the star icon on your cube has to be face up.
Yeah, so it's interesting. The idea is each turn, you roll one cube, one face, whatever direction you're rolling it, and then you also do the additional movement indicated by that face.
Right, and some of them are move the cube three orthogonal spaces,
and you can double back, or slide, quote-unquote, all the way to the end of a row or column until you're stopped by something.
Right, and then there's one that's don't do anything.
Stop sign. Yeah.
And so it's an interesting strategy game. It's an abstract strategy game. There's really no theme to it. And we played it 3 times in a row. I actually thought it was really fun.
Yeah, it was nice and puzzly and thinky without being heavy. You're not trying to keep too much in your mind at once.
Right. There's a picture of me on Instagram and I look depressed.
He's not depressed. He was just thinking hard.
Just thinking hard. There was steam coming out of my ears. So that we will have a review for that on the website at some point. I will say that I appreciate what they're going for with this is a nice, pretty thing to look at, and you leave this on your table. But this is 2018.
For those of us who store board games, the packaging is kind of awful.
Yeah, yeah.
So sorry, guys.
That's the only difficulty there. You really kind of have to put it back in the box or have the board, which is just a flat board, and like a bag or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a storage difficulty, but other than that, I mean, the game itself is a nice abstract strategy game, and it really is nice to look at.
Yeah. I'm gonna back all the way up to New Year's Day, and the first game we played was Bad Doctor. The first game we played after sleeping and waking up again
right.
on New Year's Day
right.
is a game called Bad Doctor from Mayday Games.
Yep. I was nervous about the game. So we were hanging out with some of our conservative friends, and I just didn't know how the humor was yeah. going to go in the game.
It seemed like it could be risque and crude or whatever.
I just didn't know. Like, I wasn't going to not play it, but I was
yeah.
on guard.
And we pulled it out, and it was delightful.
It was... This game is great. Okay, so I work in the medical profession. I mean, I know technology, but in the medical profession. And so I had to laugh at this game. The premise of the game is that you are a doctor, and you want to keep people alive on your turn.
Yeah, you can cure people once in a while. Most of the time, you're just kind of applying Band-Aids and trying to keep them alive a little longer. It's actually a sort of puzzle-building game. A tile laying game where most of the tiles have multiple places that you would have to attach other tiles, and you have to close off all of the possible connections in order to cure a patient.
Right. So a number of patients are placed out, and on some of the edges of the patients, they have
little wounds, basically.
Wounds of different colors. And you are placing your treatment tile to correspond with
those wounds.
Those output.
Yeah.
Output issues, right? But sometimes the treatments that you place have
more
other issues attached to them, which is, I mean, it's a little bit crude, I guess, but it's kind of a representation of what happens a lot of times in healthcare. And so what you're doing is every time you place a new tile down and you block off one of those treatments, you put this, it kind of looks like a Band-Aid,
yeah.
over that with your icon to indicate that it's
your name,
that
yeah.
it's your...
That was your treatment
plan. Your treatment, right. Any patient that isn't visited on your turn gets a little extra condition cube. Each patient has a certain number of conditions that they can acquire before they die.
Yeah, basically, like, you know, you go from regular to critical care right. to, like, ICU, and then you're dead.
Right. So the thing about the game is those little Band-Aids that you put on when you treat something,
mm-hmm.
if a patient dies on your turn, everybody else's Band-Aids score for them, and yours get discarded. If a patient dies on somebody else's turn, then any Band-Aids that you have on that one would score for you.
But if you completely cure a patient, so you've managed to close off all of the possible outlets, then your Band-Aids score for you, and anybody else who had their little Band-Aids on that patient gets nothing.
Right. So you're trying to keep patients alive that you can't cure by treating them in some way, and there's some of the treatments that you put down have some text on them that will move
allow
some
you
of the
to move stuff around,
around
yeah.
stuff like that. So you're trying to keep them from dying on your turn, hopefully curing them if you can, but just keeping them alive so they die on someone else's watch.
And all of the tiles, the patients and the treatments, have these great little comics on them, little one-panel comics, make me think of like Far Side and stuff like that. It was pretty funny.
Yeah,
it's the kind of game that you start making up a story about what you're doing, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we had one the way the second game ended. We had this one mutant patient with like 15 treatments.
Oh man, they came in with like a hangnail, and every time we treated them, we just added more open slots,
and it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. Yeah,
that poor guy.
And then it literally ended up. A 50-50 look of the draw.
Yeah.
One of our friends.
And somebody managed to cure that patient and then score enough to win the game. So that was a lot of fun. As you mentioned, it's not actually the first game we played in 2019, because the first game we played was after midnight, after we sent all the kids to bed, and we played Unlock the Adventurers of Oz.
Yeah, that that's an interesting unlock box. It obviously is very closely tied to the story of The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
If you know the story, you will have a lot more success, no doubt. But it is hard.
Yeah, it was definitely hard, but at the same time, I didn't... Maybe it's just that I've done enough unlock boxes now, but I didn't feel guilty asking for hints. I was just like, I understand where the story's going, but I don't know what to do here. And rather than beat my head against the wall, we'll just ask the little app thing for a hint.
It was also because it was 1:30 in the morning.
A little bit of that, too. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. I do recommend that, especially if you are a Wizard of Oz fan. I had a little bit of extra time the week of New Year's,
mm-hmm.
even with work. And so you and I had a lovely little coffee date.
We did. It was wonderful.
We played Super Tall.
Yeah, we did. So this is a game we got for review from Button Chai. I was actually hoping to buy it, so I'm super excited to have it. It is nothing like I thought it would be, but I'm still enjoying it. In Super Tall, you are competing against either one or two other players to build the best skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a tile laying game, but with cards.
So you're building these towers, and as you put different layers on the tower and make the tower go higher, every layer that you put on has to have a value that is equal or higher than the level below it.
Right, a tax value.
Is that what it is? Tax value? Okay. And in addition to that, there are different types of floors. So there's like a corporate office floor, there's a residential floor, there's an entertainment floor, there's a...
A nature floor.
Is
the fourth
like
kind,
that.
Yeah.
And so as you're putting your towers together, there's also these other like meta goals.
Yeah.
That scored different amounts of points. At the end of the game, whichever type of floor you have at the top scores your towers differently.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it scores based on the content of the tower. Sometimes it scores based on what your tower is adjacent to. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of different pieces to manipulate and move around as you play the game and try to get the highest score.
But it's Button Chai, so there's a lot of pieces to manipulate while only being 18 cards.
Right. Yeah, there's one or two rules in this game that I think are a little silly. Specifically, the requirement to have three decks to draw from, for example.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. But I really enjoyed playing it. I want to play it many more times before I give a verdict on it.
Sure. I like the game. I had a lot of fun playing the game. Yeah. Just there's a couple things that I thought were a little strange.
All right, that's fair.
We did get a chance to combine our copies of Ice Cool and Ice Cool 2.
Much to Asher's delight.
Oh, man, that kid. And we had kind of a zany game of Ice Cool
mega game
with all five of us. So from 4 to 37 years old, trying to play one game of Ice Cool.
I think we had a pretty good time overall.
Yeah, there were definitely some frustrating parts to it. Kids don't really grasp the fact that you need to change the angle from which you look at things.
Yes.
Or at least our kids. I shouldn't say that for every kid, but our kids had a hard time recognizing that you can't just flick sideways and expect it to be perfectly aligned. You have to actually move around the table and line your shots up and make sure that you're making the right shot. And that led to a lot of frustration.
Yeah, but I think that's something that should come with time. And I think it might be easier to see in the single game rather than the mega game.
Possibly. One thing I thought was really cool is when you pick up a copy of Ice Cool 2, it has two booklets in it. And one of them is essentially the same as the Ice Cool booklet and says, here's how you put the game together and here's how you play and yada yada. The other one has a series of methods to put the two sets of boxes together.
Yes.
And some of them include like sliding rooms, which I thought was really neat.
Yeah. At least one of our children really, really wanted to try that. And I was like, you know what? For our first time combining games, let's just go with this relatively simple layout.
Right.
And I think that was the right choice.
But Ice Cool, if you don't know, is a game with Weeble penguins, and you're flicking them around trying to hit other penguins and get fish out of doorways.
Yeah, and sometimes as a penguin, you're trying to catch other penguins.
Right. So, good time.
Yeah. Later on in the week, we pulled out our copy of Shutterbug.
Mm-hmm.
From Calliope.
Yep.
And let's see, I think it was three of us who played that together.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good time.
I liked it a lot better.
The country.
I liked it a lot better than the first time I played it.
Really mythical animals.
Weird looking things. Yeah. It makes me think that maybe I played it wrong the first time. I'm really not sure. I mean, I know we've had a couple of different games like that in the past. So I'm going to have to play that one some more.
Sure.
I don't think it's an amazing game either way. It's fine.
It's fine.
But it the first time I played it, I really didn't care for it. So fine is a lot better.
I'm glad we fixed that problem at least.
Yep, exactly. I have to give a big shout out to Gwen and Sam at Runaway Parade, because Fire Tower is not even technically in fulfillment yet. It's like at port and making its way to distribution centers and about to get fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam and Gwen, I don't know what the deal is. I'm assuming, I should say this much. I'm assuming that they're not hand labeling the labels for every single copy of Fire Tower that's going out. That is an assumption that I am making. But we received a USPS priority mail handwritten label shipment with Asher's copy of Fire Tower in it. And it came 3 days before his birthday.
Oh, and he was so excited. If you look on our Instagram or I think on our Twitter, you see pictures of him hugging the box.
Hugging the box.
He was so excited.
And I think that between all of the people, that game has now been played four times in the last 3 days.
In the last couple of days, yeah.
So actually, for all the times we've talked about Fire Tower,
you had never played it.
I had never played it before.
And neither had I, actually.
So I've now played it twice, and you've played it twice.
Yes. And it's great. I really like it.
Fire Tower is a fun little game.
I love the feeling of not fully being in control of what's going on. You're trying to push fire away from you and towards other people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fire, and it doesn't always act predictably.
Right. Absolutely.
We're definitely having a real good time with that game, and I bet it's going to get a whole lot more play.
Mm-hmm. So I played a game last week that was done by Vincent Dutrait, and I knew I recognized his name, and I wasn't sure who he was, but I looked around. He did New York 1901.
Oh, cool.
And this game was Discoveries, The Adventures of Lewis and Clark. I came home and I put it on my BGG want in trade list. I mean, I'll say
I
that
see.
Much. Yeah, so Discoveries is a dice manipulation game where you are rolling dice and you have to complete these cards in order to get victory points or to do some set collection. And it's just really interesting the way that the die rolling works. And I found it to be really fun. And it was quick and easy to learn. And so I liked it quite a bit. I don't really know how else to explain it without playing it more, because I only played it one time.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing more about it another time then.
Yep. It was pretty good. I think it was published by Ludonaut, maybe. Sounds right.
The other day, while you were out, the kids asked me to play a game with them. And they tried to set it up on the floor, and I said no. And so we set up in the living room on our piano bench so I could sit on the couch. The game Rocky Road a la Mode. We had a great time.
Mm-hmm. Another game that I somehow have not managed to play.
Yeah, well, we'll get there. In Rocky Road a la Mode, you travel around and around this little loop representing a neighborhood. And the movement is such that the person in last place, the person at the back, always is the next person to go. Much like Takedo. And the end game is triggered when somebody passes 9 points. And then everyone else is allowed to have as many turns as they need to pass that person on the loop. Our son Asher made a play that bumped him all the way up to 11 points. So he was looking at it, he's like, all right, I'm in really good shape. Without realizing that he was literally as close as possible to his sister Claire without being in front of her. So she got, it was some ridiculous number of turns. It was like 9 or 10 turns going around the entire loop and just doing pretty much whatever she wanted because nobody could stop her. And she ended the game with 15 points.
Dope.
Yeah. But we still had fun, and that's what matters. And I bet you anything he's not going to make that mistake again.
I went, while you were playing that, well, part of the time that you were playing that game, I was over at a friend's house playing some games. We played Cloud Nine.
Okay.
Which is basically the best rendition of Liar's Dice that I've played, I think, yet. It was pretty interesting. And we also played a game called Ricochet Robots. Ricochet Robots is this speed logic game where there's a series of robots that are randomly on this board, and you flip over a tile, and that tile indicates you have to get this color robot to that spot in as few moves as possible. And then everybody is looking at the board, and there's all these kind of like little wall sections kind of stuck up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rule is that when you move a robot, it moves until it hits a wall or another robot.
Okay.
So it can't, like, move and stop in the middle of
something.
Gotcha. And so you're trying to bounce all these robots around until you can get the one that you want into the spot that you want. And so everybody's looking until someone says, I can do it in, I don't know, 15 moves. And they flip this timer over. And then everybody has until the timer runs out.
Oh, to, like, do a lower bid?
To do it, to bid lower. And then once the timer runs out, you have to move the robots and do it in that many. And if you do successfully get it, you get that chit. And then you move the little start markers, which are under the robots, to the new robot locations, and then you flip over the next chit and you do it again. You do it again. You do it again. And it's a really fun little logic puzzle kind of game. It's funny to watch people trying to plan it all out, because all you see is people's just heads jerking back and forth as they're trying to follow. Yep. But it's really, it's an interesting puzzle, because there's four robots on the board, or maybe five. And so you, even though only one of them is the one that you actually want to get into a final location, you have to move the other ones around to maybe stack them up to create a wall so that, you know, the robot that you want to move will stop at that wall or something like that. And so it's really, really fun. It's a nerd engineer game. I mean, it totally is.
I would like to play this game.
You're liking what you're hearing?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's a good game. So that's Ricochet Robots. I don't actually know who publishes that, because the copy that we had was basically a print play.
All right, fair. Let's just mention one or two more. We were over at a friend's house, and we pulled out Poetry Slam, actually on insistence of one of the older children.
Right.
And we're like, all right, it's got a very involved setup for what's basically a word game.
I totally agree with you, and it's so odd that there's so many different pieces to that game.
Yeah.
Some, like, of the things, like,
it works.
I wish,
but
you could just write down the slams instead of having to hand out slam tokens.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But I agree with you. I mean, I think that for the most part, most of those pieces are necessary, but it does seem like an awful lot. Like, you can kind of watch people, like, if people aren't big gamers, you can kind of watch their eyes start to glaze over
as you're getting out all the
10
pieces.
Minutes, you know, setting this game up. But then you actually play the game, and it's like, oh, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I'm really liking it. It's sort of a party word game for gamers. It's definitely heavier than your standard party game, but not by much.
Right.
The more I play it, the more I'm enjoying it. And this was a nice opportunity to see that we had two 10-year-olds playing with us, with a group of adults, and they held their own. I definitely would not go any younger than 10.
Right. I mean, there were a couple times when our Claire pulled some stuff out that was really good.
She made some great words and some great rhymes to clue off, you know, clue to other people what the words were.
Mm-hmm.
They were really good. I think she was also kind of going with some of what my technique is, which is don't necessarily just try to make the longest word possible. Make a word that you can clue, even if it's going to be a little shorter.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was Poetry Slam. I mean, I think that's about it. That's certainly enough. We have been playing a lot of games. We played some In Vino Morte, some Get the MacGuffin.
Yes. Those were cute, fun, party-like games with our group of six adults and children as well.
You and I played some Cave versus Cave recently as well.
Yep.
Some good stuff. We've been playing a lot of games, and I hope to keep playing a lot of games, although this is going to be a tough week for me.
Well, that's all right. We can take a little break if we need to. So let's talk about Board Game in the Middle.
Yeah, so this is a segment that we debuted on the show 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And we brought to you three games. They were Small World, Jumanji, and King Domino.
And our question was, which one of these has the middle rating on BGG? And I realized afterwards, BGG has two kinds of ratings. They have their geek rating and the average rating. So I decided we would go with the average rating.
Right. I think that fits. And we had a couple of guesses on Facebook.
We did. Two of those people got it right. The game in the middle is Small World.
It is. Which is, I think, what I thought it was going to be last week.
Yeah, I think so too. And honorable mention, Duana thought that it was Small World and then King Domino. You guys are not far off. King Domino, the average rating is 7.40. Small World, the average rating is 7.31. They are really close.
Really, really, really close.
And Jumanji is around 4.5. We kind of need that.
So we are going to play Board Game in the Middle again.
Sure. Have you picked the games?
Let's go with Ice Cool 1, Cave versus Cave.
That's Caverna Cave versus Cave. Okay. And how about Rocky Road a la mode?
Sure, that sounds great. Rocky Road a la mode. This is going to be a tough one. I'm trying to think right now.
In the middle of those, I think it's going to be Rocky Road.
I think it's going to be Cave versus Cave.
All right. May the most average game win.
All right, we'll find out in 2 weeks.
So on that note, let's take a break.
All right, we'll be right back.
Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble. Fire burn and cauldron bubble.
There's your Shakespeare for the day.
But this is not a Shakespeare class.
It's a Snap Review.
For Potions Class, published by Buttonshy Games.
Created by Owen Bolkosh. Potions Class is a two-player game, lasts 15 minutes, and it's for ages 6+. It is a game where you are racing against your opponent to try to create 3 potions faster than them.
Potions Class has a unusual order of play. On your turn, you draw 3 cards from the deck, 1 at a time. Of those 3, you must give 1 to your opponent, 1 to yourself, and play 1 on the potions that are currently available to be made.
So every potion that is laid out in the center of the table has 3 elements that are required to create it. And the cards that you're drawing are individual element cards. So for example, there could be a potion of terrain out on the table, which requires 3 earth elements. On each turn, I'm going to draw 3 cards. I'm going to give 1 to you, I'm going to take 1, and I'm going to play 1 onto a potion. Whoever completes a potion by playing the 3rd card on that potion finishes it and gets to take it onto their side, almost like a trophy, and the first 1 to 3 of these wins. And so there's a lot of strategy around figuring out when you want to put something into the middle or not. Now, before you draw your cards and determine where you want to put them, anything that's in your private reserve, those are the ones that you've given to yourself, you can put on the potion cards. And so, depending on how much you're paying attention to the cards that have gone into the stack, because this is a Buttonshy game and there's only 18 cards, you may be able to predict what you think is going to come out, play some cards from your private reserve onto some potions, draw some cards, play them, and create those potions.
We didn't mention that you can also intentionally play incorrect elements onto a potion to explode it and temporarily take it out of play.
And that plays exactly into that strategy that I was talking about, because if you think you might know what's coming, or you look at your opponent's private reserve and you know they're going to be able to complete something, you can destroy that potion on purpose, so they can't make it.
And that's really where the strategy of the game comes in, is balancing out what can I make, what can my opponent make, and can I stop them while also progressing towards the potions that I want to make?
So let's talk strategy a little bit and what we thought of the game. The first time I played this, I was thinking in a very constructive mindset, and so I wasn't really thinking about destroying potions on purpose, and the game felt almost like I knew what was coming before it happened. It seemed like whoever went first had a distinct advantage, and it was going to be very hard to compete with that.
But then once we really got into the habit of looking ahead enough to mitigate that advantage by destroying potions on purpose, we had a lot more back and forth. Until someone eventually gets backed into a corner and the other person can no longer be stopped.
And just like playing the wrong element onto a potion will destroy it, if someone's private reserve has more than 3 cards in it, that gets wiped as well. And so with all of these different ways of basically being a destructive force in the game, it really does balance it out, except it still feels a little bit to me like at some point you kind of get backed into a corner and you can see the end coming.
We think the main reason for that is just because there are so few cards here. There are 6 potion cards, which are double-sided. So in theory, you could have different combinations come up, but really there's only 6 potion cards available. And there's only 12 element cards available. 4 of fire, 4 of earth, and 4 of water.
We love the Buttonshy format. There's a lot of really just ingenious things that Buttonshy does with decks of 18 cards. But in this case, it's just a little bit too limiting, I think.
The strategy behind the game is sound, but if you have 3 cards in your reserve and your opponent has 3 cards in their reserve, and there are 3 cards currently played out onto the potions on the table, you know exactly what 3 cards are left in the draw pile. And that's where it really falls down a little bit as a game.
Yeah, basically, if the game had half again the elements, I think we would feel a little bit differently about it. But it just felt a little bit too limiting. There's just other games that I think, because they're not playing by the same rules, basically, mm-hmm. have enough variety in it where this one felt a little bit flat for us.
That said, the suggested age range on this game is 6+. I think that's exactly right. Technically, you don't even need to be able to read to play this game, although it helps a little. And much like checkers, it's a game that a kid can pick up and play at a moderate level, not at a high strategy level, almost right away.
I would almost say that you can use the element cards to teach a little bit of reading, because they're single word cards.
Mm-hmm.
It is clear that the fire card is fire. It is clear that the water card is water. And so beginning readers could almost use some of that. I mean, you're not going to use it as an educational opportunity, but it's certainly something where they could look at it and say, oh, okay, I know what that word is.
There aren't too many words on the cards. Sure.
There's a lot here in the mechanics that we appreciate, and the simplicity and the art design is good. We like that wallet format that Buttonshy offers to us, but it did fall a little bit flat because the card count wasn't quite as high as we would have liked. So I think we're going to go with 2.5 beakers out of 5 for Potions Class.
Sounds about right to me. I'd recommend it as a good restaurant game for kid dates. You know, one parent, one kid.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me.
And that's Potions Class.
Get
a snap!
And we're back. So, we are going to talk about 2018. Our favorite games? I mean, we could do this a lot of different ways. I think we could talk about just games that really resonated with us from 2018, or we could just do the math and talk about what games we played the most.
How about a little of both?
All right. Let's do a little bit of both. You're so smart. Well, why don't we do this first? Let's start with hearing from the kids.
All right.
Hey, guys. We're talking about the best games of 2018, or at least our favorite games of 2018. Asher, what was your favorite game of 2018?
I have two favorites. My first favorite is Fire Tower, because I dominate everyone.
I'm shocked.
I even beat the creators.
So Fire Tower technically was released in 2019, but we have our copy now. But you had a lot of fun playing it in 2018?
Yeah, it's really fun, because you're beating the other towers, but you're protecting your tower at the same time. And sometimes you can, like whisper to each other and, like, team up or something.
Sure. So what was your other favorite?
Tiny Ninjas, because it's a game you can play in the box, so it's like a travel game, and you can play a solo player, so I take it down most of the time when I'm pretty bored, and I don't really want to read a book to just play.
Awesome. Claire, how about you? What were some of your favorite or best games in 2018?
Well, my favorite game that was new... Mm-hmm. To us was Fluff.
Okay, that's a game from Bananagrams that is basically Liar's Dice, but cute.
And my favorite game that we already had and wasn't really new and stuff was Mole Rats in Space.
Mole Rats in Space is definitely a fantastic game, and I'm glad we finally have our own copy. Anything else special about 2018?
Not really.
All right, and that was the kids. I think there might be some recency bias in some of those selections.
A little bit, yeah.
But I mean, they're kids. That happens.
I mean, they're our best example of going after the new hotness, right?
Probably. So before we get into our thoughts, let's get into the hard numbers.
Sure. Would it surprise you that our top most played game of the year is one we had never played until December?
Until December.
Until December.
See, I figured it was going to be Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters, because we played that game a lot.
We did play it a lot, and that's still in our top 10.
Okay.
We got Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters near the end of September.
Right. Right. So if it's December, then it has to be Drop It.
Drop It is our number one most played game of the year. I, at least, played it 13 times.
That's bananas.
And I think the first time I ever played it was December 1st.
That's crazy. Okay, so Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters and Drop It are our top two, I guess, for the year?
They're in the top 10. Our top three for the year are Drop It, Ancestry, and Deep Sea Adventure.
Sure. Okay. All right. Yep. All of those are excellent games.
And if you've listened to the podcast for any length of time, none of those should be a surprise to you.
The only one of those that is actually a 2018 game, though.
Is Drop It, yes. So that's the hard numbers, and, you know, a little bit of the fruit of my 2018 resolution to log all my gameplays.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to be able to look back.
It is. It sure is. So let's talk about some games this year that really took us kind of for a loop or really made us step back and say, wow, this game is excellent. And one of those games for me was a game that I had completely forgotten was a 2018 game because it came earlier in the year. But it is a game that's getting great, great acclaim. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous game, excellently produced by Druid City Games, and that is The Grim Forest.
Yeah, man, it feels like we've had that game forever, not for less than a year.
Yeah, I know. I think it came out in February.
Yeah, it definitely belongs on any top family games of 2018.
Right. I mean, the production value was just absolutely through the roof. It's a nice game. If your family doesn't like Take That, it's got a little bit of Take That in it, which can be a problem, but that's very dependent on the family. It's an excellent game with just beautiful, beautiful artwork and really great minis. The production value is just top-notch.
Yeah.
And it hits so many stretch goals and has so much extra stuff in it. It's just great. I mean, the insert, I don't know the last time I saw an insert that came in a game stock that was as good as that one.
Yeah, I agree.
It's tremendous. Tremendous. I really honestly think that game raised the bar for expectation on game production.
Yeah, and especially like what the packaging should look like. Not the outer box, but when you open up the box, what it should look like inside.
Yep. I think that was the first time I had ever seen game trays in a box standard, and then we saw it again in Megaland.
Yeah, we did.
And I think there's been a few more of them as well.
So. I'm kind of sold on that idea. Like, it makes setting up and getting started with a game so much faster and easier.
It's just a quality of life thing. Like, it's very much a first world problem kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, totally. But so are board games in general.
Yeah, I know. But it just... I really think that the Grim Forest raised the bar on production quality expectations with board games.
But even for gameplay, I like that it's got one of the styles of gameplay that works really well in a family game, which is take a simple concept and layer a few extra pieces on top of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because if I stripped away some of the extra player powers and stuff, this is a game I can play with the 4-year-old. Now, it's not the full game, but it's enough that he understands how it works.
Right. And as we talk about the evolution of things like teaching turns and then putting those layers on top of each other to get kids a little bit more into actual board games, it's a really, really great way to do that.
You know, and don't forget, younger kids are hyper aware of the quality of the pieces in the game. He always comes back to Grim Forest, not because he loves the gameplay, although he understands how to play, but because it's so pretty and fun to hold and pick up the pieces, and he wants to play with them more.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about it.
He often tries to go open the box and play with it by himself, and
right.
We have tried to discourage him from that. So, what else? Any other specific ones you saw mentioned and went, oh yeah, we should talk about that one?
I mean, Drop It is on my list.
As well it should be.
Drop It is... just, it's a great family game. I think a lot of crunchy board gamers look at a game like Drop It and think, you know, that's not really a board game. It's a different kind of thing. But you know what? We're talking about family games, and that is a game that appeals to every age.
Everybody.
And any age can play the game with any age. And they do a great job with 2 or 3 or 4 players.
You can be strategic. You can be random if you want to be random about it. Both ways, it's fun.
Right, right. I mean, there's a reason why it's the only perfect rating that we've given a Snap Review.
Agreed.
Right. Drop It is an excellent, excellent title. Another one that's on our list, speaking of perfect ratings, there's another game that we gave a perfect rating this year. Only it wasn't a Snap Review, it was a full written review, and that was for Dinosaur Tea Party.
Yeah, so our writer and friend, Nick, wrote the review for Dinosaur Tea Party, and he sold us on the game. We were like, wait a minute, this sounds like the perfect family game. This was, of course, before we had Drop It, but the perfect family game for a group of different ages to play together, because it's kind of about winning, but it's mostly about having fun
and being silly, which I like. I like to be silly.
Do you really?
I do.
We mentioned 2 weeks ago that we played this with my father and stepmother, and even my stepmother, who's not a big gamer at all, eventually really got into it and you know, started doing a little bit of the accents and a little bit of the deduction and enjoying herself with it, which was a great time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any games on your list, dear?
Well, I was trying to think about 2018 games. I went and found the Smithsonian compiled a list of their most notable games from 2018, which I thought was interesting, especially because they were all kind of gamery games. No Monopoly here, no silly apples-to-apples kind of party games. The closest thing to a party game they had on there was Bob Ross Happy Little Accents.
That is the game that we played.
Yes, and I think that well deserves a top of 2018 mention.
I would put it on that list only in the sense that a top list like that deserves some diversity.
Sure.
I don't think there's anything particularly notable about the game, but there's not a lot of games that require art that are really at that level of ease of entry.
Yeah, I come back to it over and over again because unlike a Pictionary or something like this, you're not trying to get people to guess what it is you drew, and you have a very short time period. So instead of having that same kind of stress of like, oh no, what if I can't get it right? What if people can't figure it out? You just do the best you can, and at the end you have three drawings to pick from, and you say, this one is my best one.
And that cleverness that you need to use in Pictionary, you get to explain in Happy Little Accidents.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's almost like the sweet release in Poetry Slam where someone figures out your word or you tell them what the word is, and people look at it and they say, that was so clever.
That
was so cool. And you get to do that as part of the game in Happy Little Accidents. And that alone, like, that's a cool thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I like that it takes that idea of a party, you know, drawing game and makes it all at once faster and a little bit more frantic, but also less stressful, and you can feel more clever about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was only one other game on the Smithsonian's list that we've actually played, which is Azul.
Right.
You know, winner of the Spiel des Jahres, all that, yada, yada, yada. It's a good game.
It is. It's not the kind of game. It didn't blow me away. I had fun playing it. It was fine. It was a solid. I appreciated it.
Yeah.
There's just other games I enjoy playing more.
Yeah. And you know what? Our taste is not everyone else's taste, mm-hmm. and that's fine.
Right. I did put one more game on my list, which is a game that we played this year that I really I have a huge amount of appreciation for the craft that went into the creation of this game. I don't know if it's quite my favorite game of the year or up there with a Drop It or a Dinosaur Tea Party, only because it is a game that I think you really need to be a gamer to play, unless you're really expecting quarterbacking, which is something that we actually try to avoid in family games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Spy Club.
Oh, sure.
The craft that went into creating this game is awesome. And I really love how they reuse elements of the game to do multiple things, and they reuse cards to do different things, and all of this stuff that goes into it. I mean, it's like a finely honed thing, carefully balanced, all that stuff. I just thought I really, really appreciated a lot of that, and I love playing it. It's just a little tough.
It's a hard game.
Right, and unlike something like Drop It or Dinosaur Tea Party, where I can introduce it to family members who maybe don't like to play games, or I can play it with the kids without having to get them like psyched up to play the game,
mm-hmm.
I have to do that with Spy Club, and that's probably the biggest reason why it hasn't made it to our table more, is because we're a pretty busy family, and we need to sit down and, you know, plan to play this game in order to get it to the table. But I love everything about it. It's not really a knock on the game. It's what the game is. So it's not quite that upper echelon for me, but it's a great game that came out this year.
Sure. So I don't think I'm going to see this show up on anybody else's list, but I think Anomia Kids definitely deserves a mention. It came out in 2018. We're a little biased. We already loved Anomia and Duple.
Mm.
But I still can't get enough of, once again, taking a common party game kind of idea and twisting it a little bit and making it more accessible and easier for kids to get into.
Well,
like Bob Ross Happy Accidents did for the drawing game.
The thing about Anomia Kids that it's so remarkable is that they adjusted it and made some changes to the game to allow it to be more approachable by kids without removing the fun factor for adults.
Right.
Which is important.
Right. It is the only word game I have ever been able to play with kids under 10 and not feel like I had to hold back that I had an unfair advantage. Because Anomia Kids is all about identifying the beginning sound of a word, and you're given a picture, so any word that fits that picture is fine. And it has that same feeling that the other Anomia games do of just searching your brain as it suddenly goes blank and you're like, I knew words that start with Why can't I think of any?
I mean, I do think that adults will have a slight advantage in a game like that, but it's nothing like basically any other word game.
Yeah, I love it. I think I love it more than Anomia now.
Oh. Well, I've got a couple of honorable mentions. These are games that came out in 2018 that, depending on the audience, are considered family-friendly games that a lot of people really, really, really liked. We didn't have the opportunity to play them, but I did want to mention them just for the sake of
semi-completeness
games, right? And I have three of them. One of them is Stuffed Fables.
Okay, sure.
So Plaid Hat Games, Jerry Hawthorne, the guy who did Mice and Mystics, also did Stuffed Fables, which is scaled a little bit younger. Our kids can handle Mice and Mystics, but you've talked a little bit about how the mechanics are a little unwieldy for playing the game once every 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
So Stuffed Fables, definitely something to check out. The other ones on my list are Everdell,
okay,
from Starling Games, which has a three-dimensional tree as part of the board, and there's a few different games that are coming out now that have this three-dimensional aspect to them, and that seems to be one of the new hotness mechanics, I think.
You know what? I like the way that's going, though.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, I mean, we reviewed two ourselves in December of Drop It and Gnomes at Night, so... You know.
Yeah, but those are a little bit different, but I know what you're saying. And then the third one on my list is Keyforge. Keyforge,
all right,
being
fair.
The dynamically generated deck game. It seems to be really popular right now. It's really popular
really,
right now.
Really, really popular.
And depending on some of the crazy dynamically generated names you get, people are buying stuff.
Crazy stuff.
Like, people are buying decks for unreasonable amounts of money, if you ask me. But those are three things that came out in 2018 that are getting tons and tons of buzz, and I figured I'd mention them.
I thought of one more that, again, we have not played, but should be mentioned. Again, not something I immediately thought of as a 2018 game, is My Little Scythe.
Is that 2018, really?
Yeah, I mean, it won a award for Best Print and Play in 2017, but as far as an actual retail available game... Stonemaier Games 2018. It's August or September, something like that.
Cool. It's kind of hard to believe that. I mean, we've been hearing about it for so long, but I guess if that's when it came out, that's when it came out. We have some friends who have a copy, and they said they would let us borrow it. So I'm
excited looking forward to
try that game out.
Yes. So I think that's it. It's probably enough.
All right. That is it for our 2018 games. Do you want to talk about one game that you're looking forward to in 2019?
Why don't we save that for another show?
Okay, we can do that. But one thing we won't say for another show is our back talk.
We won't take it from our kids.
But we'll take it from you. We did get some notes over the last couple of weeks that we'd like to share with you. We got a note from our listener, Sam, who said, Happy New Year. I'm a new listener prompted by the fact that I'm about to be a new dad.
Congratulations, Sam.
I'm really enjoying the show so far. My big question is, how old are your kids? I'm asking so I can figure what age I want to start mine on board games and so I can figure out what games at what ages. Are you aware of any other podcasts or sites that only focus on kids' games? I know it's hard because I assume most people aren't going to keep playing kids and family games as their kids can handle some heavier ones. So we have talked about some of our friends who do a lot of the same stuff that we do. We've talked about Engage Family Gaming. One Board Family.
Also a good one. And Games for Families with Max Davey, although that's more of a YouTube channel.
Yeah, you can check him out. He's a pediatrician in Britain, so he's got a lot of really great insight. They just finished up a 24-hour gaming marathon for charity, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and Sam's got a good point that as your kids grow up, you start playing different games. But first of all, we have a wide-ish age range, as we regularly talk about. As of when the show goes out, we have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 4-year-old.
Right. Happy birthday, Asher.
But it's one of the reasons why we've tried to collect some more people on our writing staff, at least, to represent a wide range of ages.
Right. Absolutely.
Between all our writers, our kids range from 1 to 16, 17,
something like that. So there is a wide range of kids in our greater writing core.
Yeah. Sam was also asking how to figure out what age to start on board games. The answer is, once they show interest, have a little bit of an attention span, and can follow directions.
Yep. So there's a couple different ways that you can do this. One of the greatest ways that you can get your kids interested in board games is to find a couple pieces from board games that, number one, your kids won't choke on, and number two, will not be damaged by them getting put in your children's mouths.
Yes. Or that you're okay with getting damaged.
Right. And have them sit on your lap while you're playing a game and let them play with those pieces. They don't even have to be from that game. I'm kind of thinking of like the pieces from Forbidden Island, although they might be a little small. Some of them are big enough.
It depends on the pieces you're looking at. Right. But big chunky meeples.
Yeah, some stuff that your kids can put in their hands and feel like they're part of the action. And then from there, you'll get into games like the Think Fun Roll and Play, which is a plush cube that you can roll, and then you perform the action that's on the cube. It's not a game as we think of games, but it's a way to take turns with your child and have them learn, it's my turn to do this thing, and then your turn to do this thing.
Yeah.
And then we get into games that I know you like to talk about a lot, like Go Away Monster.
Like Go Away Monster, or any of the HABA My Very First games,
yeah,
which are designed...
super simple.
They're designed to be over in less than 10 minutes. I mean, a couple of turns, and then you're done. And that is about right when you're looking at that, maybe as young as 18 months if they're really precocious, up to about 2.5 years old age range.
Right. And there's two things to think about with those. Number one, they're not that expensive. I think the most expensive ones are in the $15 to $20 range.
Yeah.
And number two, when you move your kid up is completely dependent on your child.
Yeah.
Right. If they show a willingness or an ability to move up in games, then you can move them up to something else. You can go older pretty quickly if you stick with abstract games, because usually abstract games don't use words.
Most of the time, yeah.
And kids are really good with symbols.
Yes. Wow.
Really good with symbols.
They?
And so, you know, we talked about Deblockle, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you could play Deblockle with our four-year-old pretty easily.
Yeah, once we walk through how the different symbols work.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, are you going to beat him every time?
Oh, yeah.
Probably. But he'll feel like he's part of the game, and that, again, reinforcing turn-taking and these kinds of things will really, really help.
But even with Deblockle, you could easily handicap the game. You could start with four cubes, and he could start with one.
Sure.
And that could be a good way to make the game more even.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then there's going to be cooperative games are a fantastic way to start to teach strategy to your children, because you're mm-hmm. working through the same strategy together. Fireside Games is coming out with My First Castle Panic this year,
mm-hmm.
which, admittedly, I look at Castle Panic and I say, this game is pretty straightforward and easy to understand, and you should be able to play this, especially as a cooperative game with the family. But I mean, we love Castle Panic. Our four-year-old, I am really looking forward to getting our hands on this game to see how he can grok it without us having to really lead him
through
everything.
Every single step, yeah.
And I already talked to Fireside, and I think we are going to be able to get that in for review. So I'm
That'll
pretty
be awesome.
Excited about that. But a lot of the My First games, there's My First Castle Panic, there's Ticket to Ride My First Journey, there's
My First Stone Age.
My First Stone Age. Those games, you're still not going to be able to get into those until your child is 4 to 6 years old. And so
yeah.
A lot of that beginner stuff is really the kinds of things that we talked about before.
Yeah. So. And keep in mind, it's not a linear journey either. It's whatever area your kid is the most interested in, they'll jump ahead in that while not necessarily being interested in a different style of game that's at the same level.
Right, right.
So, good luck, Sam.
And
keep listening.
Yeah, keep listening. Thanks for reaching out and stay in touch.
We also got an iTunes review. Hooray!
Hooray!
From Marty UC. He said about the podcast, it is hosted by a husband and wife of the same family. Many other family-slanted gaming media only includes one of the parents. It's so helpful to hear both parents' point of view, because that is the goal of family gaming, to share the experience together.
I couldn't agree more.
Yay! Thanks, Marty!
And if you like the idea of being part of the Family Gamers, there's a really easy way for you to do that, and that is to visit us on PodPledge.
TheFamilyGamers.com/PodPledge.
Mm-hmm. This is a way that you can see a little bit more of what we're doing, and there's all sorts of different ways that you can contribute to the show and be included in the family. We'll send you birthday cards. We'll send you Christmas cards. We'll send you special Family Gamers pins.
We'll thank you on the show. Even better, our kids will thank you on the show.
Yep, just like this.
A big thank you to our PodPledge supporters.
Jeff.
Joe.
I'm Peter.
Thank you for all of your support.
Thank you.
But there's other ways you can find us, too.
Absolutely. You can find us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at FamilyGamersAA.
You can check out our Facebook community. The easiest way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community.
Mm-hmm. Or, just like Sam did, you can always email us, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Stitcher, on Spotify, on TuneIn. TuneIn allows you to ask your smart speaker to play the Family Gamers podcast.
I think that's it for this week.
All right. Well, until next week.
Play games with your kids.